this is Mr. Brewer welcoming you to our For Gottonia Project podcast. On this episode, we wanted to share a cool experience we recently had in our psychology class. So we were visited by the lovely Mrs. Karen Hahn. She's a social worker from psychology specialist in Canton, Illinois. Karen's visit is definitely consistent with our objective to examine the social problems we face in our own context of rural America, specifically the 16 counties in western Illinois, referred to by many as For Gottonia. In fact, if we want firsthand insights of what exactly issues are and what it takes to overcome them, I'm not sure there's anybody better to talk to than a social worker just like Karen. But before we begin, please remember this project is produced by students and teachers at Cuba High School located in Fulton County. We're one of 16 rural counties in the western part of the state. Sorry, the audio is kind of annoying in this one. We didn't remember our microphone for her visit, but it's very much worth a listen because Karen has a lot of wisdom to share. So in this first part, Karen briefly shared with us her journey to Canton, Illinois, which like many of us, wasn't exactly what she planned at first. So if you're a psychology student, the question I want you to hear from this part is number one, while in college, Karen changed majors from what to what, and why did she do this?
Well, my name is Karen Hahn, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker with psychology specialists. And Mr. Brewer asked me to come talk today. He said that you guys have been studying psychology, that you might have some questions. You have some interest maybe in getting into the field and that kind of thing. So I told him what I was going to do is kind of start where I started. So I am not originally from Illinois. I grew up on a farm. I have 8 brothers and sisters, and I am number 8 of 9. I was supposed to be the baby, and then, you know, oops happened. So, you know, I feel like I got cheated. I was supposed to be the baby. On a farm, you grow up working, doing things, you know, it's your job to keep the livestock alive, keep the crops alive, that kind of stuff. At 14, I got my first paying job, and that was really exciting because I didn't work as hard as I did on the farm, but I still had to do both. School, good student, got math grants, got science grants, and I was going to be an accountant because they make money. So I went to school my first 2 years at a junior college, and a lot of numbers. So I got in a sociology class and I went, what? Yes. Look at what I can learn here. This is like super exciting. It's not black and white and it's all gray and colors and everything. And oh, God. So I didn't really listen to myself because I'm like, oh, I need to make money. And so I went to Truman State University and to get a major in business administration. Well, about a year and a half into that, I'm like, this is not me. I'm changing my degree. I told my dad, and he said, this is the dumbest decision you've ever made. My dad never talked to me like that. Like, I was always great and wonderful and whatever, and I'm stupid. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I know this is what's right for me. So I graduated from Northeast Missouri State with a degree in child and families child and family health, basically. It's a social service degree. It's not necessarily a social work degree. So from there, I moved out to Canton. I became the director of a daycare. From there, I worked with runaways. I worked in foster care. Hated it. From there, I worked at the school district. I worked at the college. So these are all things you can do as a social worker. I worked at the college. I worked at community mental health for 9 years with severe and persistently mentally ill people, working as a liaison at Zeller, which was the state mental hospital in Peoria that no longer exists. And from there, when I decided to go back to school, I needed some new learning. So home health and hospice at Graham had an opening. Does anybody know what hospice is? Okay. If you would have told me at your age that I would enjoy working with terminally ill people, I would have thought you were crazy. Probably one of my favorite things I've ever done. My favorite things. So in January, I was just telling Mr. Brewer, in January, December 23rd, administration from the hospital came in and said, We have some bad news for you. We're closing this department, and all of you will be unemployed as of the end of January. I've been there for 9.5 years. Holy smokes, what am I going to do? So I decided at that time, there's different levels of licensure in social work. So I decided at that time, I was going to take a break, and I was going to go back. I was going to study to get my next licensure, which I now have, which has allowed me to do private practice, which is what I now do, which is really cool. I'm my own boss. So
wow, Karen has an awesome story. And in case you couldn't tell, the job of a social worker spans a lot of different fields. In this next segment, Karen shared with us details about being a social worker, which, by the way, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it's a pretty in-demand job right now. In fact, they estimate over 74,800 social worker jobs will be added in the next 10 years. Question number two for my psychology students is, according to Karen, what is the most demanding part of being a social worker?
Social work. So there's a bachelor's level degree that can get you pretty much entry level jobs. In this area, those entry level jobs are probably going to be somewhere $15, $17 an hour. They're going to typically be salary. And what that means is that you signed up for a 40 hour gig and you're probably going to work 60. That's the nature of entry-level beast. That's why you got to get past that step. Paperwork, lots of paperwork in entry-level jobs. Things like working in foster care, working for probation, DCFS, hospitals, drug addiction, mental health. You can do some of those things if you have somebody with a master's degree that will oversee you. So lots of different options in the world of social work. Having worked with severely, persistently mentally ill, I did mental health evaluations for people who are suicidal or homicidal, with some folks that had schizophrenia, which means they actively hallucinate. One in particular, who doesn't mind if I tell his story as long as I don't tell his name. Meanest son of a gun you ever met when he was actively psychotic. Sweetest person you ever met when he wasn't. His mother started giving him marijuana at age 2.5. And then she started shooting him up with drugs at age 5. Wonder why he's a little not okay? Mean fellow when he was psychotic. And he and I just came to this understanding that when I walked into the emergency room and he was in there, he would say to me, "Don't come in here, I will kill you." And he meant it. So I would go out and I would tell the doctor, "We need to hospitalize him." On what grounds? He said he's going to kill me, and he means it. That was how he asked for help in a safe way. He didn't want to hurt anyone.
The next segment of Karen's visit, she briefly addressed the debate over spanking. This is a topic that we wanted feedback on because we've been studying the effectiveness of punishment on learning. Now, Karen finds that even researchers don't seem to have a consensus over this issue. She also brought information on the demographics of Fulton County from the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, DCFS. Before she showed us statistics on child abuse, she wanted us to gain an understanding of our immediate context in Fulton County, specifically in regards to ethnicity and educational attainment. Questions for students in this part include, number three, what percent of adults in Fulton County do not have a high school diploma at the time of the 2000 U.S. Census?
All right, so one of the first things that Mr. Brewer asked me about was spanking. Who in this room thinks spanking's okay? Well, you know, you go online and you Google and you're like, what's out there on spanking? What's out there on spanking? And I always try to find the scholarly articles. So the top three hits that I get are evidence favoring the use of spanking, the great spanking debate, and research on spanking is bad for every kid. What is it? People have researched this. How can it be so different? Okay. And how does that pertain to Fulton County, Illinois? You know, how does that pertain to my world that I live in every day? All right? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Fulton County, Illinois, and then I'm going to come back to that. I think that Fulton County, Illinois has its own creature. It's a very unique county in the state. It's one of the biggest counties in the state. It's one of the poorest counties in the state. Okay? A couple of things. It's one of the fastest turnaround times if you apply for Medicaid state funding. One of the fastest turnaround counties in the state. That's why a lot of people move to this county, because they can get support and help quickly, within weeks, versus in Cook County, months, maybe a year. HUD, housing assistance in this county, same kind of thing. They may be, you know, there's a waiting list now, maybe 9 months, but in the other in more populated counties, that wait time is years. You may never get into where you get assistance with housing and help with income. Another really important level thing about that is the educational level in this county. I used to work, one of the things that I did as a social worker too was I taught GED. And that's a real eye-opener to help students who didn't succeed in a normal classroom be able to succeed and go on and get their GED. But 38% of our population in the 2000 census, 38% had a high school diploma. 28% had some college. 7.8% had a bachelor's degree, and 3.6 had a master's degree. That leaves 22% of the adults in this county that don't have a high school education. It's crazy. And you have to think about that. When you work in social work, you have to think about that. If I presented to someone with less than a high school education, which would typically mean they left school in the eighth grade, that's a pretty typical dropout. If I gave them this, I might as well have given them this. Because the language in here is too hard to understand. It's important in this county when you give information that you give it at a sixth grade reading level. Otherwise you lose half your population that you're providing to.
So probably some info in there that may surprise you, and some that probably doesn't surprise you at all. But this is where our time together got a little more serious as we heard from Karen about child abuse in Fulton County. Now, topics in this portion include understanding what and who are mandated reporters, the difference between indicated cases of child abuse versus reported cases of child abuse, and why these reports of child abuse have increased dramatically since 2011. We also provide a link in this section for the annual report from DCFS that Karen shares with us. So if you're interested in examining this further, you can go to our website, forgottoniaproject.wordpress, and view more of that. Now, questions for my students on this one are number 4, what does it mean to be a mandated reporter, and provide an example of one? Number 5, explain the difference between indicated cases of child abuse and reported cases of child abuse. How many phone calls made to the DCFS hotline were classified as indicated? And number 6, why have rates of child abuse increased since 2011?
So I bring you those factors to kind of talk about child abuse and why maybe statistically Fulton County is a little bit higher than some of the other counties. So when somebody calls in to the hotline, the DCFS hotline, which is 1-800-25-ABUSE, by the way, easy to remember that way, they get somebody on the other end and they say, "Hi, this is Karen. I need to report an incident of child abuse. Are you a mandated reporter?" What's that mean? Have you talked about that?
Nope.
A mandated reporter is somebody that is in a protective role of children or other at-risk population. Mandated reporter. gives me status on the hotline, I'm a mad-headed reporter. I'll get you right through to somebody. Okay? Please tell me what's going on. Well, I heard from Billy Bob that Jimmy John called Becky and her dad hit her. I'm sorry. That's not first-hand information. So, the number of kids reported in this middle is exactly what I just did. They can be those cases of the phone call like I just pretended to make, or they can be those kids who you really truly have firsthand information on, that you've seen the bruises, you've seen the marks, and you have to make a report. Okay? The numbers have kind of gotten crazy. It's about the same in the last reported year, 2015, it's 110,000 children. In 2006, it was 110,000 children. Then we see a jump, then we see a drop, and then we see a big drop. Part of this big drop has to do with state funding. It's a little false. Some state funding changes happened in 2011, so there weren't the people to take the phone calls, so a lot of phone calls got missed. They squashed those numbers so much that a lot of things didn't happen. And then it starts climbing back up again. Okay. There's a correlation between child abuse and unemployment. Why do you think that is? Why do you think if unemployment goes up, child abuse goes up? Okay. What happens when you don't have money for lunch?
I don't eat.
Okay. You get frustrated about that, though?
Yeah.
So if you don't have money for lunch, you don't eat, you get frustrated. But what if you don't have money for lights or gas? Or you don't know when you're going to have money for lights or gas, those numbers escalate. Okay.
Hey, what, this table looks different. So what's the difference? This one says number of kids reported as abused, and then this one says number indicated for abuse. And
yes.
The numbers are all...
Okay, they're all different.
Yeah.
So reported is I've called, and I've made that, I've called in a report. Indicated means that there was enough information in that report and with that investigation that that parent, that caregiver, is going to be charged with abuse or neglect. They've been indicated. Okay. So they are very different. So we go from hundreds of thousands, 100,000, to 33,000. So a third of those phone calls called in actually got indicated. They actually had enough information to say, yes, this child was abused or neglected.
So some of you sports fans out there might remember in 2014 the story of Minnesota Vikings star running back Adrian Peterson being charged with reckless or negligent injury to a child and suspended. He was suspended for the rest of the NFL season. See, Peterson repeatedly used a tree branch on his four-year-old son, a tactic that was also used on him as a child. Now, the lesson for many was simple. Don't discipline out of anger. You don't realize the damage that you can cause. Although Karen Hahn finds spanking can be effective in the right time and place, she also emphasizes the danger of disciplining out of emotion. So questions for students on this part. Number 7, why is it important not to discipline children out of anger?
For me personally, I'm with you guys. I think it has a purpose and a place, but not for every situation. I also personally believe that the more emotional you are, the more you should step back from your child. You're going to hurt them, and you're not going to know you hurt them. Because when you're emotionally intense, I don't know how hard I'm hitting. When I'm more aware, I can feel it. Now that I'm aware, that hurts. All right? If that hurts me, you're good too. Huge disputes. I have a colleague that works in my office. It's like, there's never, ever, 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 ever a time that spanking is appropriate. Ever. We don't talk about spanking very much. We don't talk about that very much. Some believe in it.
couldn't help but ask Karen before our time ended her feelings about the impact technology is having, not just on behavior, but on her profession as well. You'll hear me try to sound off some data about the increasing use of screen time amongst children under the age of 7. See, in 2011, 1% of kids under the age of 7 owned a tablet. That figure is now up to almost 50%, and they're using it for almost an hour per day. So what does all this mean? Let's listen in, being sure to answer the following questions. Number 8, generally speaking, what concerns does Karen have about the increasing use of devices? Number 9, how is technology changing the profession of psychology and social work, specifically in regards to a certain psychiatrist and an unfortunate television problem a former client of hers appeared to have? Good luck.
It's become important. It's become a problem because of this. And you have a cell phone because of that. And because of instant technology and instant gratification. And when we don't have instant gratification, we don't know what to do. If you go to McDonald's and you drive up and they say, can you please pull to lane 1? Does anybody else get mad about that besides me? That infuriates me.
That's Cody's favorite place.
Infuriates me.
Oh, yeah.
We are a drive-through microwave society that doesn't want to wait for anything. So if you're not going to listen to me, why should I have to wait to tell you why? So a little history. So I did home health and hospice, which is a different kind of treatment than doing one-on-one counseling therapy, which is what I'm doing now again. So I've kind of, in the last 9 years, technology hasn't been such a barrier for me in treatment. It's actually been a help because, you know, grandma's dying in Canton, Illinois, and granddaughter lives in California, so let's FaceTime her. You know, we can use technology in a good way. And so for those 9 years, that's how technology affected my work. We were able to access people we probably couldn't have accessed before. Coming back into mental health therapy, when I worked at community mental health, cell phones were like, nobody had them, or very few people had them, or only the rich people had them, or I don't know how that worked really, but they weren't an issue in therapy. So I had a couple that came in, and I've seen them several times now, and they came in and they're fighting, their whole relationship is react. And so I'm like, well, come in and sit down and I want to see how this works. Well, we got into a big fight over this text message I sent her, and then I showed up at his work and then blah, 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 because she misinterpreted a text message, right? So the more we got to talking, the more I said, you know, part of the problem with this relationship is that there's three people in it. You, her, and technology. Okay? I mean that sincerely. You don't have to talk to people anymore. Your generation doesn't have to. Just text people. Technology with the younger kids stimulates an area of the brain that causes some issues with inattention. All right, so we hand our kid a tablet. Here, be quiet. Can you do this? So I'm teaching her, pay attention to what you've got here, but listen to me. Are you listening to me? Do you know I'm talking to you? Okay, we're stimulating that part of the brain for inattentiveness. And we're also teaching them that they have to have something to entertain. Another thing with technology is a lot of telepsych type things, teledoctors. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they bring in a movie camera and a TV. And then you get to talk to that person on the TV. A lot of that because, especially in our community, because psychiatrists don't want to come to Fulton County, Illinois. They don't want to live here. They don't want to drive here. So we need to access them. We have to get them how we can get them and not through telepsych. Right? So So back to my days at Community Mental Health. So they decide they're going to do telepsych, and I have, do you know what schizophrenia is? Schizophrenia is somebody who has delusions, flashbacks, thoughts, things that aren't real that go on around them. And my particular patient heard voices in the TV that told him to do stuff. So my supervisor comes to me and says, Karen, we're going to do this telepsych, and I want you to sit in with so-and-so on his first session. I'm like, you're kidding, right? Well, no, I'm not kidding. I kind of want to see how this goes. I said, do you know that out of all the people in this center, the one you picked to try this on is the one who hears voices from the TV and can't determine reality from it? What's real and what's not, and now you're going to have his doctor prescribing medicine from a TV. Okay. Anybody else see a problem? Okay. How do you work with him to prepare him that sometimes when you see that guy on the TV, it is real?
Wow, this is crazy. So a guy who hears voices in his TV receives therapy from a psychiatrist in no other setting than, of course, a TV. Well, before we let Karen leave, she had to explain to us what the big book she was lugging around was. This book is referred to as the DSM-5. It's massive, and it's something that Karen refers to as the Therapist Bible, and it's for good reason. So be sure to understand with this last section, our last question, number 10, how many symptoms do you need to meet in order to be diagnosed with a specific mental disorder?
This is a therapist, what I call the therapist Bible. This is the diagnostic manual. In this manual, tabbed are the sections of diagnosis, and within them probably 5 or 6 diagnoses. So these are the things that the American Psychiatric Association recognizes as mental health disorders. All 900 pages. Okay? So when you come into my office and you present me with some symptoms, then I have to figure out what out of these 900 pages pertains to you. And it has, every diagnosis has a certain number of symptoms that you have to meet. So like major depressive disorder, you need to make 5 out of the following. Depressed mood most of the day, every day. Diminished pleasure in most or all activities. Significant weight loss or weight gain. Insomnia or hyperinsomnia. Psychomotor agitation. Fatigue or loss of energy. Feelings of worthlessness. Diminished ability to think or concentrate. Recurrent thoughts of death, and another one that it doesn't say on here is irritability and agitation. People think of depression and they think of boo-boo, woe is me, but depression is also real. A lot of irritability and anger because they don't know what to do, and I don't want to interact with you because you want to talk to me, and well, get away from me.
Yeah.
I just want to be under a blanket in a hole.
Yeah.
So, hey, all right, thank you, Karen Hahn, for speaking with our psychology class. And that about wraps it up for this edition. Here's a quick recap of what we learned. Number one, we learned that the DSM-5 is a very sacred book to psychologists everywhere. Number two, we discussed that whether you decide to use spanking or not, we must never discipline out of anger. Number three, we learned about mandated reporters and the differences between indicated and reported cases of child abuse. And number four, most importantly, we learned about our new friend Karen Hahn and what it takes to be a social worker in Fulton County. I, for one, am a better person for having met her and deeply respect all she does to make a community like ours a better place. So that's it for now. Thank you for hanging out with us, and you will hear from the For Gatonia Project real soon. And don't forget that For Gatonia is produced by students and teachers at Cuba High School, located in Fulton County, Illinois. You can connect with us with any questions or comments by visiting our very cool webpage, www.forgatoniawordpress.com. You'll find all kinds of resources about the history of and demographics of For Gatonia, as well as a blog post about our experience meeting Karen. A foundation of our project is Illinois Social Science Inquiry Standard No. 9, which seeks to apply democratic strategies and procedures to address local, regional, or global concerns and take action in or out of school. Hope you'll join us next time.